right, folks, welcome back to the Flystick.com Tee Talk Podcast. My name is Stefan Tiedorf. Sitting with my co-host, as per usual, Scott McLeod. And it's PGA Championship week, and we're excited. Scotty, can you believe the last major championship was the Open Championship last year with Shane Lowry?
It's kind of insane, really, when we think about it. I mean, men's major championship, obviously, that's what we're talking about. But, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, here we are, August, and we're talking about the first major of the year. I mean, yeah, just kind of insane. But, I mean, you know, that's 2020, right?
Well, here's the thing. That feels like 3 years ago, Shane Lowry winning it. Like, it feels forever ago, and obviously he went on his tear after that, and I don't mean on the golf course. But you know, that's what we expected out of an Irishman winning the Open. So I'm excited. We're going to talk all about the PGA Championship, and then basically this entire episode is going to be dedicated to it. But just so much other golf happened this weekend. I think we should start with the WGC. Justin Thomas wins yet again. This guy is on fire. I was ready to come in this week with a take about Brendan Todd being the player of the year and have all these stats to prove that. Brendan Todd choked on Sunday and basically was the reverse pace car coming in after Justin Thomas and Brooks came in, and Justin Thomas, I think, is running away with the player of the year at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it looked like Brendan Todd, you know, was going to be the first three-time winner on tour this year, and guess what? Justin Thomas said, "Nah, I don't think so. I think I'll take that title." And yeah, I mean, the way he finished, which obviously 66-65 on the weekend, pretty damn impressive. Not as impressive as Tom Lewis, who snuck in there with 61-66 and got a piece of that that tie just afterwards, which is a name that we'll have to look for, especially this coming week. But in the end, Thomas ended up winning by three, and really Brooks knocked it in the water on 18, felt he had to be aggressive, certainly had to be, but yeah, it turned into something worth watching at least. And I'm not sure if it was the best golf of the weekend, but it certainly was the one that caught my attention more because the preview, I guess, a little bit of the PGA, but certainly was no shortage of golf to watch on the weekend.
No, not at all. And just to really touch on him winning three times, he did win the Tournament of Champions earlier this year. And, you know, it's a 35-person field. I get it. You have to win to even get in there, but you know, it's almost 2-2 in my eyes, but Justin Thomas is going to run away with it unless Brendan Todd picks up another win here. And I really don't like his chances at the PGA this week, but that's a little foreshadowing to later. Brooks Koepka with the 3-6 Mafia finish in honor of the group from Memphis. He bogeys 16, a par five, I don't want to say easy up and down, but you cannot hit the shot. He hit it over the back. Then he comes with this huge birdie on 17 and then a double on 18, which was tough to watch. But I do need to apologize because last week I told a story, an inside source saying, you know, Brooks was having a tough time on the range, throwing some clubs, a little bit upset. And then Brooks said, "Screw you, I'm fine." And other than the last hole, which, you know, really didn't surprise me that, you know, Brooks didn't win. I wasn't surprised by that, but just like, I apologize. Anyone that took Brooks to like come in like the bottom 20 or something like that, or not even make the top 20, that's on me.
Well, you know what? That's golf. That really is golf. And I always get a kick out of that. I mean, it's always fun to pick out who we think is going to play well based on, you know, whatever circumstances are happening. But golf is such an odd game where, you know, form can obviously come back. Things that we see, we think is going to affect a player, it doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily the case. And I think, I don't know if that's a lesson to be learned for everyone, but I think that's just what we do. I mean, we all speculate, we wonder, we you know, try to gather information and guess on what their form is going to be. And hey, we're going to be doing that same thing today, talking about the PGA. And I'm sure some of the takes we're going to have, they're not going to pan out. I'm sure some of the guesses, you know, that's just the way it is. Even if you are an expert, even if you're somebody who's really, really informed, golf's a strange game. You can just catch lightning in the bottle right away.
That is that's fair to say. But Justin Thomas won. This guy, he's on fire, and he deserves to be number one in the world. John Rahm, poor John Rahm, spend 4 days as the number one player in the world. Could even enjoy it. Ricky Fowler, another story coming out of the weekend. This guy just cannot close on Sundays. He had a taste of the lead on Sunday, but ultimately, you know, this guy's 144th on tour on Sunday final round scoring. And that's just not going to get it done. But it's not like this is new for Ricky. This has been a few years now of this.
Yeah, you know, he comes out hot on Sunday, has two birdies in the first three holes, and then just, you know, can't find the planet after that. I mean, you can tell everybody's sort of, you know, cheering him on, but he was five over after that, you know, and you just can't do that. You can't shoot, you know, 73, you know, three over par in a final round of trying to win a tournament when you're contention. And like you said, he had that taste. He was right up there, and he ended up tied for 15th. It just became another mediocre finish for him. And you know, like you said, it's happened over and over and over again. And unfortunately, I think some of us are getting to the point of this is what we expect more than the other side of things. You know, sitting there talking about, hey, Ricky's going to win or it's his time. I don't even know if I've tried to pick him for any big events in the last little while because I'm tired of it. I mean, there's just it's not going to happen.
Yeah, he's no longer the guy like the best player without a major. I think it's just like, he's just who he is. He was a marketable player that got some wins early and got some wins, you know, when he was young, and then just chips away and gets one every couple of years. And is he a great player? Of course, but he's just, I don't know. He doesn't have that clutch instinct to win on a Sunday, it feels like, at this point. And then even if you go back to when he won at the Waste Management a few years ago, he kind of didn't close it in the most clutch fashion. I'm pretty sure he shot over par in the final day, but he just had a big lead to go into it. And if you go back a few years ago prior to that, when he literally gave it away to Hideki on Sunday on the back nine at the Waste Management into a playoff and then couldn't recover. So I don't know what it is. It could be nothing. We could be over analyzing data here, but Ricky's got to figure something out because, you know, there's a lot of expectations. Maybe people are going to pick him this week. Who knows? I wouldn't personally touch on him, but what are your thoughts this week? But are we too early? Do we got more golf to talk about?
Oh, we've got more golf to talk about, but I mean, I think we can still finish off, you know, talking about Ricky here. I think the problem that happens is that we wait and we wait and we wait on a certain player like this, and we have expectations. But eventually just time catches up. And I mean, you've only got so many events that you're going to be out there and playing. You only got so many wins that you're going to get. You only have so many opportunities, and unless you're closing them out, they're just going to pass you by. And there's just going to be that many more good players coming up on tour that he's going to have to compete with. So, hey, maybe it's this week. We'll get to that. I don't think it's this week, that's for sure, based on the golf course, but you never know. Maybe at some point, you know, and again, we've talked about this continuously, maybe at some point all of a sudden, snap, he rattles off, you know, 3-4 wins or something and really, you know, makes big things happen. Got a lot of majors coming up in the next little while. Maybe it turns into Ricky season. Will it? I don't know. That's pretty hard to predict, but I certainly like the form of a few other players much better heading into this week.
As you and I know, a great putter can equalize anything, you know, so watch out, especially in majors. The putting is usually a key. Before one last thing to wrap up this week, Brooks always talks about the Brinks truck that follows him around. I think the Brinks truck sped out of there on Sunday, as that double bogey on 18 cost Brooks $450,000. So Brooks likes to talk about all the money he has and, you know, how nothing bothers him. Well, I bet you he lost a few hours of sleep on his old Whoop tracker there. Could have told him that. We were talking about last week how that tournament really brought no buzz to us. But for me, it was the only tournament I really could find on TV. The LPGA coverage was just so slim. But Danielle Kang ended up winning her fourth LPGA Tour event. The golf course, when I did see it, looked great. But it definitely was wet. But it is a stunning design at Inverness.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a major history, a pedigree. LPGA played on this golf course years and years and years ago as well. But and they're also getting ready to host the Solheim Cup in 2021. And you're right. You know, the weather conditions were not great, made it very tough on the scoring. They ended up with some decent weather at the end. So it didn't show off the golf course as well as it possibly could. But even the responses from the players, they were talking about it like it being a U.S. Open condition and just the way they cut the grass, the manicuring, and you know, they've done a great tree program here and they've got rid of a lot of that. And I think it was a nice way for the LPGA to come back. As weak as the field was, we talked about that, how deep they had to go in the priority rankings to get players into this field. But certainly to have the LPGA playing Inverness, I think was great.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if our, if my girl from last week even ended up making the cut, who was, what was it, like 350th on the priority
357
list.
Yeah.
And I mean, I said I was cheering for her, and I don't even remember her name from last
Letitia, week. Letitia Beck.
So did Letitia Beck make the cut? We're going to find out real quick here. It looks like she missed the cut by a few shots. So unfortunately, Letitia didn't take advantage of her 3,050th ranking to get into the event. But, you know, I feel like you probably saw a little bit more of it. What are you hearing about the event and anything you're hearing from the grounds? The only thing I heard from one caddy was it was just nice to be back. And, you know, they felt safe on the LPGA Tour, which is nice to hear.
Yeah, it was fairly positive. Like we mentioned, it was a 54 hole dress rehearsal really for this week, where they're staying in Toledo and playing you know, their next event, the Marathon Classic. Couple of positive tests, Marina Alex and Gabby Lopez. So obviously they weren't playing the event. Marina Alex today has tested negative and she will be in the field. She was, her test, I believe, was before the tournament proper. So so fairly safe overall. Would have been nice, obviously, if they had some spectators. The way the golf course is set up, you really can't get spectators there. Like you see some of the other events, like the Champions Tour and whatever, they're close enough to streets where people can maybe cheer or stuff.
Even
like
the
that
WGC, they got people over the fences and stuff.
Yeah,
you could hear cheers on shots. It was odd.
Yeah, Inverness was interesting, though. They actually, their members were allowed to go there and eat. So on 18, there was people up on their deck, on their patio, that could cheer. So that was kind of a different way to go about it, you know, not to have spectators, but sort of have spectators. So
how many more events do you think we're going to get before, you know, I don't want to, you know, make it sound like I'm really just, you know, taking it on America. I couldn't find the right word without swearing, but, you know, hurting America, you know, saying bad things about America. How many more events do you actually think before one event's just be like, bring them in, bring the fans in, whether it's like a hockey game, a basketball. I feel like we're just so close to something stupid happening.
I you know, I'd hate to speculate on that. I would think that most sports organizations are going to be smart enough to think, you know, that's just a bad move, not only from a you know, from a PR standpoint, but obviously from a medical standpoint as well.
I was looking at last week at WGC, I forget the player, it may have been Bryson, there's two guys drinking a beer, they're 10 feet away from them. Right. And I can tell you they're not media members. Right. Like and it was just like, how safe is that anyway? So it's, I don't know. I feel like we're getting close to some sort of breakthrough where there's a venue like that, where you said like the members are allowed in. And now the members are going to be standing up there, and maybe that is how we slowly get there. But it, you know, I feel like we're close to somebody doing something stupid and ruining it for everybody, kind of like baseball right now. It looks like that's not going to last much longer.
Yeah, I think that was just a bad call on their side, but we certainly could see it with yeah, maybe there's an event where they you know, they have a small amount of people come in and they test it for a large, make sure that they have you know, factors in there where they're definitely going to socially distance and kind of see how that goes. I don't know what the gain is from that versus just going, okay, either no fans or we have fans. you know, that's kind of beyond me, but I think we need to be a little further along in the process here with, you know, dealing with COVID-19 before we all of a sudden just think, okay, yeah, it's fine. Let's just do this.
I do think golf will probably be the first one to do it because they are outdoors. You can really separate people. And I think people will do a good job until there's like the 18th hole. Or I think if you're testing it, you got to make sure Tiger's not in the field too. Because if Tiger's in the field, everybody that's there is going to follow him around. So I do think golf will be the first one, but they got to do it right.
Yeah, and I think the other side of it too is, you know, what impact does it have from the players? I mean, obviously we've seen this for the LPGA. You know, there's a lot of players that are not there this week and not there next week because they have a wait and see attitude. Mm-hmm. They're going, okay, there's no spectators, but I still don't feel like it's safe. So let's make sure this kind of happens and then we'll see if we come out and play. So if all of a sudden, you know, that week comes where it's the PGA Tour, for an example, and they say, all right, we're going to have an event and we're going to allow spectators. How many people are going to pull out? I mean, we're already seeing it this week at the PGA Championship. There's certain players that withdrew because they had issues, John Daly being one of them. You know, he mentioned that on Twitter. He's exempt, obviously, to play in the tournament. He's somebody who's had surgeries. He has a diet. He's a diabetic. He feels he's at risk. California's got a high rate of cases and deaths. He decided he feels, you know, much safer if he just stayed at home, and he doesn't like to fly, so he's not gonna drive out there either.
No, I thought that was cool by John Daly for bringing that up, and I'm sure we're gonna talk about that more. But you had a great tweet, the withdrawal list, you know, players in, players out. You know, we talked about a player being ninth alternate at one point and not even thinking about getting a flight. Well, if I'm ninth alternate right now, I might be flying out there. Who knows what happens this week? And I really hope, you know, we have friends out there. We really hope they're safe and they're just kind of really sticking to the hotel this week, because it can get risky. California's not in a great place right now, and well, I mean, not many places are in the United States anyway. The Champions Tour, let's talk about that, and we'll wrap up the Barracuda before we just break down. Wow, we still got the Corn Ferry Tour top. We got way too much.
I know,
much
it's crazy.
let's talk about the Champions Tour. We talked about it last week. Hey, Mike Weir's making his first start. Jim Furyk made his first start. I wasn't feeling high of Mike Weir going into the Champions Tour just based on, you know, the guys that usually come out and win early are, you know, the bombers out on the PGA Tour, the long hitters on the PGA Tour. Mike finished T27. That being said, Jim Furyk shoved it right down my throat with his average of whatever, 275 off the tee. And I mean, this shouldn't have surprised anybody, Jim Furyk win. This guy still competes on the PGA Tour at 50. And here he is picking up his win on the Champions Tour with fluff on the bag. And you just love to see that.
Yeah, and you know what? He was the all-time leading money winner at the Buick Open, or the PGA Tour event that used to be at Warwick Hills. He won it in 2003 with fluff on the bag. So I wasn't surprised. And I think, you know, Jim Furyk, because he's so accurate, his short game's so good. I mean, this is free money for him. This really, really, really is.
I mean, the Champions Tour is free money.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, no cuts. They hang around. They've obviously got their status to get there. But, you know, to think, you know, he's 18-time winner on the PGA Tour. Will he be a Bernhard Langer and win 42 times on the tour? He's a guy who has the potential.
He's got the game. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, wasn't too shocked to see that. On the other side of it, he is a guy that's going to flip-flop, I think, for a while and play some PGA Tour events. And we're going to see him in the field this week at the PGA Championship. So how often he gets out there and how often he wins, well, it's wait and see. We'll see.
I was laughing, and this is just awful. What's more likely? I can't even say this. Jim Furyk wins 42 events.
Or
Fluff lives long enough for him,
ooh, wow,
for him to play for the next 10 years to win 42 events. And I mean, like, I love Fluffy, nice guy. It's just like every time I see this guy, I'm wondering how he still carries a bag that weighs more than him. Like, it's insane that he's still out there doing what he's doing week in and week out at, what, is he 71 or something like that?
Insane. Yeah, you're right. I mean, how long is he going to stay out there and do that? And obviously, as you know, the caddies are a big thing, and you want to have somebody that's really comfortable. This is a joyride for him, too.
Oh,
I mean, he gets free cash for him. But you're right. I mean, it's remarkable at what he's doing at this age. He's probably going to like the Champions Tour courses much better.
Yeah, I would hope so.
They're definitely going to be a little less demanding, but I know the Champions Tour as well is trying to make the tour a little bit more competitive. They got rid of, you know, carts in most events. They're really emphasizing the walking. They're trying to make it more, you know, less of ceremony and more of actually competitive golf. But we'll see how long that lasts.
I apologize, Fluff, if this gets back to you. I'm rooting for you, buddy. Get it, go out and win 42 more. One of the greatest of all time at carrying a golf bag, that's for sure. The Barracuda Championship wrapped up as well. Ricky Werenski wins. I'm not going to praise this guy much. I'm very much not a fan of this guy and what the things he stands for, and you can do your own research of why. I think what it comes down to for me is Troy Merritt. Like, this guy had it in the bag all the way. I was listening to another podcast where they had done it before they finished, and they're like, oh, Troy Merritt wins. He's actually going to go. That's three wins. They're talking about how three wins gets you on the Champions Tour, and obviously he did not win, and that third win is huge for guys like Troy Merritt. I was calling him Trey. Troy Merritt that want to get out on the Champions Tour one day and get that free cash. But congrats to Ricky winning that Barracuda Championship, which obviously helps him for another 2 years on the PGA Tour. Again, I didn't get to see any of this. The coverage, maybe it's just my schedule. It just didn't line up. But my understanding is he was mic'd up in the final round. What cool sound bites did you get of that?
Yeah, you know what? It was good. It was one that I did tune into. I was hoping that he was going to pull it out. I mean, if somebody was looking at it, and maybe somebody was inexperienced as far as that podcast was looking at the fact that, oh, he was, you know, 3 points ahead, thinking he was three strokes ahead. But you know, in this format, things can change very, very quickly. I think the biggest thing was that Troy Merritt likes to talk to himself. So you can hear him talking through the process of hitting the shots. And I mean, you know, there's a length of time, especially when he hit the ball in the water on a par five and a second shot where a gust of wind came up. And, you know, they were going through the process for a while, and it showed you how much math was necessary for them playing at 6,000 and 7,000 feet in Truckee, California, up in the Tahoe area. And just to hear them go through the process. And the funny part was Merritt was doing a lot of the talking, and his caddy, who's, you know, a longtime caddy for him, basically had two grunts and, you know, agreed with what he said. And that's about it. There wasn't a lot of conversation on his side of it, but it really shows you kind of what the player is going through in all these different situations. And it was great for him to do that. He had worn it in round two, had 11 points in that round. And then basically they asked him if he'd wear it again. And he said, yeah, why not? And, you know, he's a bit of a hothead too. And I think he said that actually wearing it in the second round helped him out because he knew he was mic'd up. So he had to be a little bit more even keeled. And I'll argue that point even with, I saw a tweet by somebody who I knew who said, oh, he lost it because he was mic'd up, that he should have been more fiery or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you're talking about one putt here at the end. And he already said he gained a lot in this, you know, in the second round to get up there. So I think the biggest thing was just to hear him go through his process and choosing the clubs. And, you know, he was really, you know, just doing a lot of calculations and weighing how important things were and where he needed to be and what trees were in the way and what angles he needed to be going at. And, you know, when a shot was poor, why it was poor. And I think there was just a lot of great insight that way. And for me, it made that broadcast interesting because, you know, I like the format. I love Stableford. But I think it made it that much more interesting to listen to those conversations.
Yeah. I think we should see it more often, Stableford. I also, again, with Barracuda, I was wrong. They moved courses. They weren't in Reno.
They went on the other side of the lake. Yeah, well, technically, they're in Truckee, California, which is on the other side of Lake Tahoe. So they were definitely in the same area.
Sure, but it wasn't the hardest golf course in the world to walk for caddies, as I had claimed on the previous podcast. But that's just bad journalism, if that's what you want to call me, a journalist. But I do agree. I think we need different formats. Like, you know, why can't we throw name X tournament as a Stableford where it's not a you know, an alternate event where you get all the players doing it, right? And I think one of the coolest things, and I would love this because I make a for some reason this year, a ton of double bogeys. Once you hit six shots or whatever on a hole, you just pick up the ball. You don't have to finish, which I do anyway. You know what I mean? Like it's, I think it's cool. I think we got to do it more often. Let's get different things happening. Way to go, Ricky Werenski, for you.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing that lends itself to as well is that putt, when it came down to the last hole, Werenski was in and Merritt had to make the putt to beat him, not tie him, beat him, because the way the points are, you know, for him to make the birdie, he was going to leapfrog him. So it was miss or make. That was it. There was nothing else. It wasn't a case of, you know, so it added a little bit more drama to it. Certainly other players as well. You know, this golf course, because it's at elevation, eagles were definitely a possibility. Some players were definitely eating it up that way. Aaron Wise had an amazing day on Sunday, 5 points for an eagle. So, I mean, if you come out and all of a sudden rack up a bunch of those, just allows players to be more aggressive and probably take on some shots that they wouldn't. And we could see that there if you watch the broadcast on the par fives. Nobody was laying up on the par fives. They were just bashing away at every single one of them. Didn't matter how long they were.
No, that's... there's no point. This is Stableford is amazing for an aggressive player. So yeah, you got to just go at everything, but I wish we could see it more often. Let's wrap up what happened this week with the Korn Ferry Tour. You know, Seth Reeves wins. Doesn't even matter. I'm not even going to talk about it. Taylor Pendrith again, this guy is on fire, finishes in a tie for second. That means, as you've probably heard on this podcast every week, it feels like we're just repeating ourselves. T3, second, T2, moves up to 169th in the world, which is crazy for a guy only playing on the Korn Ferry Tour without a win on the Korn Ferry Tour. He's in the U.S. Open. Is this what I'm seeing? Or he's got a couple more starts to get in the U.S. Open, the top five on the Korn Ferry Tour, getting the U.S. Open, which that excites me. Let's get this guy in there. You can go back and listen to this podcast. Just an awesome dude that, you know, all of Canada is cheering for.
Yeah, for sure. So they've got a few events left, and he has to be in the top five on the points list. He's currently third right now. So he's obviously got himself locked in there pretty solid, but you know, those four events can certainly change some things, and that will get him in the U.S. Open. But you've got to think at this point, if he can maintain that form, he's going to be in there pretty easily. And you're right, 169 in the world, just playing the Korn Ferry Tour is pretty incredible. It really is. And, he's the fifth highest ranked Canadian right now. There's four Canadians that are in the top 100. We've talked about that before. 90 under par in his last six starts. How about that for some golf?
That is crazy. For reference, there are multiple PGA Tour winners that have won within the last 2 years that are well higher than our boy Taylor Pendrith, which is crazy to think about. That's just how good he's been playing. So we're obviously rooting for him to get in the U.S. Open. All right, that was the week that was. Why don't we grab a quick break, and we're going to talk about the week coming up, the PGA Championship, Major Championship Golf is back. We're going to break down, you know, the golf course, but we're looking to see some great pairings. We got a draft for the first time. Scotty and I are going to do a draft. We're going to make a bet on it. We don't know what that is. Probably make it up on the spot. We talk about our most compelling stories of the week. We still got to hit the mailbag. We got the tip of the week. There's so much more golf to talk about. So sit back and relax, and we'll come back right after this break. All right, folks, it's PGA Championship week. We are excited. I know for me, come Thursday all the way until probably Sunday at, well, maybe like, what, 9 o'clock at night local time? I was talking to my wife about this, which she is just ecstatic about, obviously, that primetime golf this week, which is, you know, we've talked about in the past, is our favorite by a long shot. When you get to watch golf at 8 o'clock at night local time, and that's how you're going to wrap up your week, that's great. And I'm sure she's just so stoked to sit there and watch the PGA Championship this week with me right till the end.
Yeah, that was sort of like this week with, I think, six tournaments on, starting the European Tour all the way to the Barracuda, which is obviously in the West Coast, California. My wife just kept saying, "Is that golf over yet? That's still on. Well, you know what? Major weeks are really about that. Sun up to sundown, we're definitely going to be talking about this. Twitter is going to be a buzz. People are going to be obviously grinding over this because it is the first major of the year. The PGA Championship has not visited California too often. often over the years, and, you know, having it in prime time as well, you know, those West Coast sunsets, beautiful settings of San Francisco. We're going to see some cool things here as long as the fog lets up. But it should be a great week to kind of see what form these players are in as we head into a big, big run of major championships in the next few months.
Yeah, we got a major championship every month, basically, other than December, it feels like. I mean, obviously, you're going to have a break, and it's going to be April, and we'll be back at the Masters, hopefully, and everything's back to normal by then. I'm not a doctor, not a health professional. Don't quote me on that. But, you know, we're back this week, and it's exciting. It's cold out there in San Francisco.
Relatively. You
know, the what was that old quote? The coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco. but, you know, 1.9 to the first place winner. The rough is long. The golf course is long. It's going to be a fun week. I think if you're driving the golf ball well, you're going to win this week or have a good chance. And if you're not, you're going to have a real tough time out there. I saw a video of a guy dropping a ball a month ago in the rough, and you couldn't even find it. Now, look, I don't know a lot about this golf course. The last time I think I saw it was when Rory won that WGC, what was that, 2017, somewhere around then. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, obviously. It's been a while. It's going to be weird without fans. What's your plan? Just kind of couch it all week and watch it? Or is this more of a Saturday-Sunday type of thing for you at the PGA Championship?
I think for me, most of the majors, I really try to pay as much attention as possible. Thursday, Friday is always busy because, you know, you have a lot of things you're trying to do. We're trying to get ready for the Flagstick Open and stuff like that. But definitely, I think I'm going to be glued to it on Saturday and Sunday for sure. I think these West Coast golf courses, especially in San Francisco, all these golf courses that are around Lake Merced, Olympics on the other side of the lake as well. This is a cool golf course, just as far as you look up those big cypress trees. Tiger was talking about it today in his press conference, and the fact that you know, he hasn't lost any golf balls around this golf course, but at the Lake Merced course, which has these big cypress trees as well, there's been many times where all of a sudden a golf ball gets hung up there. And, you know, he said the rough is only going to get thicker. Accuracy is super important. And I saw a video as well today of Ian Poulter dropping a couple balls in the rough, and they're only a few feet apart, and one was playable and one wasn't, just of how it was mowed. And you know, it's not a long golf course, but it will play a lot longer. And Tony Finau was talking about it today, playing super long. So yeah, you know what, it is going to be must see TV, I think, for me, just because I think, you know, it's been so long since we've had a major, it just makes it that much more compelling, which is great because the PGA Championship usually doesn't have that.
Yeah, there's not a lot of roll out there is what I've heard from a couple caddies on the course. So you're gonna see a lot of drivers this week, so hopefully you're seeing guys actually hit some fairways. And if you're hitting, you know, you gotta hit driver, because if you're laying up that far, you're not getting any roll, you're kind of screwed, and you gotta hit driver and hope you catch the fairway or a good spot in the rough, just so you, because the course is long. We're talking 7200 yards for a par 70. That's deep. And, yeah. You know, like there was one par four that's 520. It's almost going to feel like a US Open. I feel like the soft conditions do help guys in a lot of ways on approach shots, but if the rough is that thick, then like, it's not going to help unless guys are willing to either lay way back, which, you know, we've seen Tiger do a lot. So, you know, he says he's ready. He says he's in a good place. You know, people are worried about him. Do you think he goes with that strategy this week of just kind of finding fairways and knowing his iron game, which is, you know, the best of all time, is actually going to help him?
Yeah, I would expect to see a lot of three woods from him. That may not be the strategy for some other players, but I think he's going to know how important that is to put a golf ball in the fairway. You know, he said the big holes are big and the short holes are small. But that tells me, you know, strategy, he knows, and to win a major championship, and obviously he's chasing number 16 as a major championship here for him, he knows that it's important to eliminate other players, and other players are going to eliminate themselves by maybe being too aggressive, although as I mentioned, Finau said, you know, he wants to be as far down as possible for when he does miss the fairways, that he has a chance to get to the green. But, you know, Tiger really is, his game is more about precision now, even more than ever. And my only concern for Tiger is the fact that, yes, it's, you know, hovering around 15, 16 Celsius, you know, in the 60s for our American friends. And the other side of it, too, I looked at the forecast. It is going to be gusty by the bay this week. We're going to see consistent winds, but we're also going to see some gusting winds. So, again, I think that plays into the hands of the smarter player, the more patient player. So I would not be surprised if Tiger really leans on that three wood this week.
Yeah, I could see Tiger. That's probably what he's asking for, is that. I could see guys, you know, I don't want to bring Rory in because I actually think Rory doesn't play well in that considering where he came from. It's not what he looks for, but a guy like Tiger, he's seen it all, right? So if it's gusty and cold, that guy will grind it out. He said today, I just got to keep my core warm. Just got to keep my core warm. I feel like he's like Gord Downie in the final concert for the Tragedy of Hip. He's just got socks wrapped around his stomach to keep his core warm. That is just way too obscure
a reference.
reference for pretty much anybody that's not Canadian, but we'll just move on. Let's just touch on the couple of the pairings for the first couple days, which you'll probably get to watch on the featured groups. So Tiger, Rory, and JT, that's a pretty good group. Tiger and JT play all the time. Spieth, DJ, and Rose. Don't know how Spieth snuck his way into that, but whatever. Ricky, of course, is back in the feature pairings because you wouldn't have a tournament without Ricky in there with Bryson and Adam Scott. What did Ricky and Adam Scott do to deserve that pairing? I don't know. You know, both of them seem to be some of the most liked guys out on tour. They could have been worse. They could have thrown Patrick Reed in there and made it a foursome to really annoy them. Sergio. I haven't heard from Sergio in forever. Sergio somehow got a feature pairing with John Rahm and Phil Mickelson. I feel like Sergio's actually the odd man out here. He's the only one that was didn't go to Arizona State.
Ah, good reference there. I mean, I think Sergio was playing okay. Same as you mentioned as well, Spieth. They both played actually well last week at TPC Southwind. So not to say they're in form and going to make some, you know, great things happen here or whatever. But yeah, I mean, Rahm and Mickelson are boys, obviously from a definite different generation. But that should make for some fun memes probably with the three of those. There's going to be some fun things online over with those three out there.
Did you see the bet that Mickelson won off of Colton Oates about John Rahm becoming a top 10 player in the world at some point? Colton Oates tweeted about it. Go back and find it. It's a great story and highly recommend it. Last feature group is our last three major winners, Gary Woodland, Shane Lowry, and Brooks Koepka. And Brooks obviously going for the three-peat this week. First player to do it since Walter Hagen in the 1920s when he won four in a row. I think this is getting way undersold this week. It's just not being talked about that much. I feel like this is a story that if this was Tiger or Rory going into this week with two in a row, no one would even watched the last week in Memphis. Everyone would just be talking about this all week. And Brooks is yet again, this guy's won four majors, and yet again I feel like he's going under the radar.
You know what? I think that probably has to do with the fact that, you know, he was so low in the FedEx rankings heading into this week. Obviously he's had the knee injury. If he was on form, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, just tying for second last week doesn't mean he's not on form, but in general, he has not been on form. And if he had come into this week, it's almost like DJ a few years ago when he was, you know, really rolling and went to that Masters and all of a sudden, you know, had the stairs incident. You know, he was being dominant up to that point. I guess if Brooks maybe had a couple wins coming into this, then maybe people will be talking about it more. But I guarantee you, you know, as we get into the week here, you're going to hear about it a lot because, as you know, and unfortunately, that's just part of sports broadcasting. Stats, obscure stats, have to be pulled out everywhere, and this one's not that obscure. So I'm sure they're going to have all sorts of montages, all sorts of tributes to the fact that he's won two in a row, and they'll play it up, and we'll hear lots more about it, especially if he gets in contention.
Yeah, it's going to be a story. These are the conditions that Brooks plays well in. He's you know, he puts pressure on himself in major championships. So I'm looking forward to watching Brooks this week. I'm looking forward to watching Justin Thomas this week. And I'm looking forward to getting a little draft going. So here's the idea I came up with, Scott. So we're each going to get four players. We're going to go back and forth, standard draft. But our last player has to have 100-1 odds or worse for you to pick them, right? So what we're going to do is we'll flip a coin. We'll go back and forth. We'll pick our teams. But before we actually do this, we need to come up with some sort of bet of what we're going to do the loser has to do. And we'll have to bring it up on the podcast some point.
As long as the loser doesn't have to give the other guy a golf lesson, because I think I've been doing that already. So.
Yeah, and you pretty much lose every time you do that. So that's unfortunate. All right, what ideas do you have? I have a couple, but let's hear. What do you think? We tried the caddy one in the past, and somehow we both got away with not having a caddy for each other. So, you know, you got any other ideas for a bet we can place on each other?
Yeah, I'm thinking the other person has to play a I'd have to get a hold of a set. Play a round of golf left-handed, count every single shot, and come and talk about it on the podcast. How bad they were, how many balls they lost, the whole deal.
Oh my God. That sounds like ops. I'm saying right now, I'm not breaking 250 if I have to do that.
It'd be fun though. It'd be content.
I legit would say my number would be 249.5. That's how bad I am at life. I'm in. I think that's a good bet.
All right.
I'm gonna flip a coin here really quickly. You can call it in the air, heads, or tails, Scotty. All right, ready? Go.
Heads.
You get the first pick.
Woo! I'll take JT. Why not? He's the hot hand.
I like it. So we are doing a snake draft, right? So you go, I get two, you get two. That's, you know, snake drafts. Are you good with that, or you want to go
sure,
back?
Sure, you didn't tell me that, but that's all right.
All right, doesn't matter.
You writing all right. This all down?
Yeah. I'll write it as we go. So with the first overall pick, Scott has picked JT. All right, so my pick, I'm going to go Bryson. I think I hate this man, obviously, as you know.
but
I think this is a bomber's paradise. I feel like you need Bryson out there. And then I got to go with Brooks just because I think the three-peat's going to it's something I want to cheer for.
All right. Let me think. I'm digging away here. All right. You got Bryson. You've got Brooks. I will take – oh, boy. It's hard early. There's so many good players. I'll take Rory. Why not? I mean, you know, he's going to be in the mix anyway. So, you know, let's go with him. I like what he's got.
All right. Who's your next pick? You get two in a row here.
Backing him up, I'm going to throw in a Canadian. I'm going to throw in Corey Connors. How's that?
Wow, there's your 100-1 odds early. You didn't even have to do it that quickly.
Boom.
But I like that. That's a good pick. I like that. All right. So, I mean, I got to. I said I like his game. I think he plays in these bad conditions better than everybody. I got to go with Tiger. I think, you know, it'd be a shame if he went through this without being drafted and we'd all get chirped if he ended up winning. Now, 100-1 odds. You know, you took Corey Connors. He's currently at 151-1, which is solid odds. I'm pretty upset that you took him, obviously.
Of course.
Brendan Todd at 126-1. I just don't like how far he hits
it. He doesn't hit it.
You know what? I'm going to go with young Tom Lewis, which they kept calling him on the broadcast last week. Young Tom Lewis. Tom Lewis is 1 year younger than Brooks Koepka, but nobody had ever heard of him, so they had to call him young Tom Lewis. He's not young by any stretch of imagination, especially compared to Scott, which quickly, just sidebar, do you know Bryson wants to live to be almost your age?
172.
130 or something like that. That is ridiculous. I apologize. Okay.
Somebody's got to do it, I guess.
Last pick. You got JT, you got Rory, you got Corey. Who's your last guy?
Last guy, oh boy. I'm going to take Rombom. Why not? He's got form. He's the ousted number one player in the world after a hot 2 week run. I say maybe he'll fight back and he wants it back. How's that?
Yeah, no, I could see John playing well out here. I think he plays well out of thick rough. He hits bombs. I'm actually shocked. I was chatting with Tomo from TaylorMade. I thought this guy was playing like a 43-inch driver. So I reached out like, hey, how long is this guy's driver? And he's like, no, it's 45 and a quarter or something like that. I was like, what? This guy, like Andre the Giant? He makes his driver look so tiny.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, actually. Maybe it's just, you know, kind of his body type, his look, the way he sets up or whatever. I mean, I've sat there and chatted with him before, and, you know, he's not like he's this big imposing guy or whatever, but, yeah, that's interesting because I thought it would have been less too.
That's fair. All right. So we got our draft done. As you heard, Scott has JT, Rory, Corey Connors, and John Rahm. And I got Bryson, Brooks, Tiger, and young Tom Lewis.
Young.
The loser has to play a full round of golf left-handed. Every single shot has to be played. What's our yardage point at this point? Because I'm thinking at my course, there's some... You ever see that video about the guy that shot
254 at TPC Sawgrass?
Yeah, there's some holes where I'm going to have to putt around. I'm going to have to putt around the stuff because I won't be able to hit a club over... over where I have to go. So this could be interesting. I'm literally setting my over under if I lose at 249.5. And
how many balls are you gonna lose? That could be the funny part.
I might have to buy a range bucket
just to bring with you.
Yeah, I might have to go to one of those golf courses that doesn't actually have range balls. They just have all the balls that they find in the golf carts over the years, and put that as my that is my bucket of balls.
Sounds good.
All right, so that's our draft. The other thing we mentioned, we want to do our most compelling stories for the week. So the idea behind this is, you know, what stories could come true this week that would just be the most compelling for us to hear? And we kind of set the bar quickly. You know, Tiger's going for major 16. We realize he's also going for win 83. It's a huge story. It's an easy story to pick. So we said neither one of us is going to pick this. We're both going to pick four stories outside of that and kind of have quick chats about it. So I'm going to leave it to you to start. What's your first story that you find very compelling?
Compelling, but I hope it doesn't happen. You know, we almost had it last week with Brandon Grace. Obviously, he got tied for second there and had to pull out of the tournament. But, you know, what happens if all of a sudden a player is leading this major through 54 holes and tests positive and cannot compete?
That would be... I caught myself there. I was going to say that's embarrassing, but that's such a stupid take. If you think, and I'm an idiot for even thinking it, that somebody that catches a virus that can be caught so easily is dumb and embarrassing. Like, yes, there are dumb ways to do it, but like, these guys are traveling. This could come from the waiter bringing up your food in your hotel. Like, I think at that point, if I'm even playing in contention after 36, I might be wearing a hazmat suit outside my hotel room. So yeah, I think that is true. How would we even handle that if that happened?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you look at the integrity of the player. Obviously, you know, if they test positive, or, you know, if they're not feeling well and they feel they need to be tested, that's just the situation the way it is. We're going to certainly see where their moral compass is. You know, if a player can all of a sudden be sick and then maybe go, maybe I'm not, you know, I'm kind of leading a major and, you know, does that happen? Does that scenario happen?
This sounds bad. I have so little faith in the PGA Tour to actually be like, let's say this, let's say Tiger Woods tests positive after 54 holes with the lead. I'm giving it 0% chance he does not play that Sunday on the PGA Championship. Like, there's no way. They're just going to let it go. I know they would. That's like, because that's just, it's money, right? And money speaks. So I'm wondering the same thing. Will something like that happen? It's so scary to think, right? Because with Tiger, how many people are going to be around him? Like, so scary to think about. I really hope we don't even get close to this situation.
Oh, I hope we don't. And I mean, I'm just, you know, I just put it out there as far as, you know, if something were to happen that was going to get attention, certainly that would. And it would just blow this event apart. Not in a good way, probably. So no. Let's hopefully it doesn't happen. And so what's yours? What's your first one that you're thinking of?
Yeah, so my first one is Jordan Spieth completing the Grand Slam. Now, if I had told you in 2017, 4 years ago, almost to the day, actually, let me get you the exact date around that. Just a week prior, that Jordan Spieth would not win 4 years later after going back-to-back wins in 2017 and picking up his third win of that year and also his third major, that this guy would not win until 2020. You wouldn't believe me. You'd call me crazy, right? Like, if you look, he obviously had close at that Masters the following year and everything happened. Danny Willett, congrats to Danny, won. But I think this is a huge story that's just kind of flying under the radar, right? Like, every year, Rory goes to the Masters and it's like, is this the year he's going to pick up the Grand Slam? Is this the year? Jordan Spieth, the last 2 years, no one's really talked about it too much. And I don't think it's a big story coming in this week. I think his game's getting into a better place. I think it's a great story. I would love to see Jordan go back. I find him entertaining for golf. I'm not rooting for him actively on Thursday, but I just think he's, you know, he came out young. We talked about last week. The guy's only, 27 years old? He looks like he's 36. I think it'd be a great story.
I agree. I think, you know, you're right. We've had that many majors in a row where, you know, to a point now that people are just going, eh, they're not even talking about it. I mean, it's in the PGA Tour notes this week for the media, but I think it's an after note. Would it be great for golf for him to kind of return to form and start winning some majors again? Yeah, I think so. I think a lot. I think it would do a lot for a lot of the people that were right behind him. On the other side of it, it's kind of, you know, we talked about Ricky and, you know, his destiny to be the player that he's supposed to be. And I mean, if you go back and look at the coverage from 2017, when people were talking about Spieth, if you bring out some of the, the tweets and the hot takes from back then, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of other people that probably would have, you know, they were predicting 10 and 12 majors at that point for him, you know, based on what was happening. And it, golf's hard.
Which isn't still out of the question.
No, he's still young enough, for sure.
Remember when Phil won his first major championship? What year was that? It was 2004, right? He picked up his first win. And Phil, at that point, quick math, has him at 34 years old in 2004.
Yeah.
Jordan's got three at that point. Now Phil has five, right? Like, he won five and, you know, whatever that span was from 2004 to 2013. Jordan still could rack out another six in the next 13 years. Why not? He's still got the game. He's still got, when that putter goes, why not? So it's one of the compelling stories this week. For me, what's your next one?
PGA Championship's always interesting as far as the field. I never give a lot of hope, obviously, for a lot of the PGA professionals that qualify.
Have that on your list. Your colleagues out there.
Maybe Marty Jurtson from Ping. That would be good to see him. He's obviously a PGA professional as well. But I think it would be interesting. We mentioned this guy earlier. If Jim Furyk or Steve Stricker were to contend, and I actually joked with somebody, Vijay Singh was in the field and he withdrew earlier this week, and then John Daly as well. And it would have been really interesting if all of a sudden there ended up being a playoff with some of these guys in the mix against each other in the PGA Championship. But again, because it's a major championship, for the reasons that we talked about earlier, and Tiger being, you know, smart and wise and playing around the golf course, there's a lot to be said for the games and the style of game for Furyk and Stricker, even though, as we mentioned, it's a long golf course, going to be playing very long. But you know what? These are pretty two durable guys. We got a guy from Wisconsin, a guy from Pennsylvania. They're used to cool weather conditions. They've had great runs over their careers and big events. One of them could contend, and that would be an interesting storyline, I think.
I could see Jim obviously is more likely than Steve. He hits it a little bit further, maybe by 5-10 yards. He's a little bit more accurate. But I think the biggest issue is that rough, right? If these guys aren't keeping it in the middle of the fairway, they're still going to be so far behind the other guys, even hitting in the fairway, that it's going to be tough. But I do think that'd be a great story. If they're in the rough, though, like, you know, nobody's looking at, sorry, Jim and Steve, but like, no one's looking at your bodies and being like, wow, they're going to just run right through that rough. Look how strong those two old lads are.
No, but if you think about that, when you're talking about Furyk, you're talking about a guy that, you know, has won US Open. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's capable and he's used to hitting, you know, a lot longer clubs in from a long distance. Yep. So, you know, so because of that, I wouldn't discount them as far as them being in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Furyk was 33 when he won that US Open.
Sure, yeah, fair enough.
Like, it's a little different, but would I count out Jim Furyk right now? Absolutely not. This guy just won last week. He's that guy that just shows up. Like, one day you're just watching and you're like, oh, it's Saturday and Jim Furyk's two off the lead going into Sunday. And I haven't seen a single shot of his on TV because he's Jim Furyk and he's 50 and people kind of forget about him, right? So I would not be surprised. I would be, I'll say this now, I'll be, and I hope I'm wrong because I love this guy, I'll be absolutely shocked if Steve Stricker is even close.
Well, Strick would be, Strick would definitely be further down the list. But I mean, Furyk, we're talking about the guy who's third all time on the PGA Tour money list. I mean, this guy is an ATM. He continues to be in the ATM. This is the guy who contended at the Players Championship just a couple years ago as well. So I don't think length is a factor. Yes, the rough could, you know, certainly, you know, be punishing for him. He's had some good success as well in the Bay Area before. So, yeah, you know, I just think it would be a neat story for sure.
Fair enough. And I'm going to follow along with my second story on the old guys list as well. No, no offense, to a fellow, eligible for the Champions Tour, co-host here, but, Phil Mickelson, at 50, still hits bombs. I've been saying I love this guy's game deep into his 50s to potentially win a major championship. I don't know necessarily if this is the one, considering how he's not the most accurate off the tee, but he's still hitting it. He's hitting it far still. You know, is you know, picking up. I can't find his numbers here for some reason. No, sorry, there he is. 296.9 off the tee, which is decent for anybody out there on the PGA Tour, long enough to keep up on any golf course. He works out a lot now. He's on this strictly coffee diet at times that helps his muscles. I don't know, the guy's insane. But I think that'd be a great story. 50-year-old Phil Mickelson coming out, picking up the win, becoming, I believe, the oldest major champion of all time. Maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah, no, I think he would be, I think by a couple years.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you never know. Phil's from, you know, he's hangs out in the California area, or he's from California. I never know with him because of taxes. He always throws me off. But I think it's obviously going to be a great story. He's hot right now. Had a great week last week. Looked better, obviously, because of Brooks making double on 18. But, you know, similar to Jim and Stricker, you know, contending, Phil picking up a win, being in the mix right till the end. I don't even think him being in the mix is a story. It has to
no,
be a win.
No, I think it's a win. Yeah, I think so too. And you're right. He would be the oldest. Julius Boros won the 68 PGA at the age of 48. So it would be big that way. On that same vein, as you mentioned, Mickelson is a California guy. We talked about this one a little bit earlier. You know, here's my other take. Ricky Fowler, you know, getting a major, doing in his home state. You know, maybe the orange blessing, you know, with the, you know, you see in the colors this week, give everybody's, you know, the Giants bags for, you know, it's a different color of orange. I get that. But, you know, TaylorMade, Callaway's got their special edition bags that look very familiar as far as that's concerned. But, he's got a funky bag this week, a tie dye thing that he's using, from Cobra Golf, a special edition one. DeChambeau's got one as well, which is sort of a nod to the Haight-Ashbury, neighborhood in San Francisco. But I think, you know, maybe this would be a cool spot. Maybe Ricky finally gets off the schneid, gets that major championship, does it in his home state. you know, stars align, away you go. I'm sure if he won it, it would be a huge story.
Oh, absolutely. And I think people would be like, hey, he finally did it. He finally did it. And I think the next story for me is very similar with Tony Finau. This guy hit, this guy's, I'm almost at the point where I'm guaranteeing a top 10 from this guy this week, just from how good he's been playing. The fact he hits bombs, he hits it real straight as well. He's a big, strong guy. That rough really won't affect him. But I think he's in a very similar situation to Ricky. And that, yes, you ain't, but Ricky has multiple wins, and he only has one win. But it's like, when are they getting over the hump? When are they getting over the hump? And I think Tony Finau's game, similar to Brooks, it kind of, you know, is suitable for major championship golf. I think it's suitable for this golf course, absolutely. You know, I think people are being hard on Tony Finau. This guy, like 5 years ago, six, 7 years ago, whatever it is, this guy wasn't even expected to ever make it as a golfer. He was on the big break.
Yeah.
And no, you know, no, I don't want to downplay David Byrne, who's still trying to sell that he's a big break winner as he travels across Canada right now and hopes to get free places to stay. I hope he hears that. He'll hate that. But like Tony Finau was on the big break, and that was like the biggest thing. And then he obviously won in Puerto Rico, I believe.
Yeah.
Shout out to Martin Trainer. And like, he's made a great career. If you told Tony Finau 7 years ago, this would be the end, he'd never make a dollar after this, he would have signed off on it then, I think. So yeah. Like, he might pick up. I think, I love his game. Similar to, I think Ricky would be a great story. Either one, I think it's like that breakthrough. The guy we always thought would win majors over the last couple of years, and here they are finally picking up that major win.
Yeah, and it'd be cool too. I think Finau is going to, you know, he talked about in his press conference today when we're recording this on the Tuesday. He talked about the fact that, you know, he might have to break out the big swing. The full swing on a few holes, because he said, you know, how long they're playing with it wet, that he might have to bring out the full swing. That would be cool to see for him to kind of come out there and put that extra gear in there and put that into play. And I think that would be something that a lot of people will be talking about if it does happen.
It would be devastating for us three quarter guys. You know,
us guys, three quarters.
Us guys that can't get past parallel. You know, it's
always quarter zip season in your backswing, right?
Yeah, it's you know, like me, John Rahm, Tony Finau. I think we're all kind of in that same group. I think, you know, when they think of three quarter swings, maybe Riggs. Shout out to Riggs. I think those are the people that they compare us all to. So it'd be a shame to see that happen full time, Tony. But if you got to pull it out to pick up that major win, I'll. You know, do what you got to do, buddy.
All right. My last one, again, something we've talked about. We know it's a storyline for sure. It will get talked about eventually. But, you know, the fact that Brooks is going for three PGA championships in a row cannot be, you know, as you mentioned, undersold, because it's a hell of a feat. It really is. I mean, for him, you know, if he came out and did that, you know, then it sets that up for that discussion about the Walter Hagen 24-27, which was played a match play, by the way, which might have been even tougher to initially, you know, kind of get that done. Not saying, you know, he was beating bigger fields than nowadays, that it would be a harder feat to do, but for Brooks to do that in the modern golf, to win three PGA championships in a row would certainly be historic for sure.
Absolutely. I think it'd be a great story. I was talking to a buddy about this. I've completely turned a corner on Brooks. I was rooting for him on Sunday. My buddy's like, I was planning to go back onto your old podcast and talk about how you were anti-Brooks for, you know, years, I guess. It's crazy to even say that about this podcast, that you can go back years on it and find content that of things I've said. Oh, that'd be bad to do that. But I've turned a corner. I think Brooks is good for the game. I think he's actually accepted that. I think golf just became too much for him, and he won so quick, so much, and he hated that he wasn't getting all the coverage he did, and then it like all came at once, and then it was like, whoa, golf's not that important to me, and he had to like push people away a little bit, and now he's back, and he's actually that positive voice and that voice that's honest, and I'm all for it. So if Brooks picks up that third win, I think it'd be amazing, three in a row. You know, last person was Walter Hagen. Let's make that happen in a century that. You know, people can relate to. Yeah. You know, that's
I mean, if you think about it, the percentage of people that are listening to this podcast that even know who Walter Hagen is would be pretty darn small.
What was his game like when you played in the PGA Championship?
It was pretty good. I mean, when I was a senior in high school, he was still a junior. But, you know, he was always sharp, and you could see he was just going places. So.
Yeah, you wanted to – you hung on to that. You followed in his coats. I got it. It's all good. You were the senior. He walked by you, and you got cut. It's a shame.
Yeah.
All right, my last story. You picked him in the draft. You know, only one Canadian's ever won a major, with Mike Weir winning the Masters. I think Corey Connors winning this would be great. Corey hasn't had his best game coming out of quarantine season, but, you know, I think this is a golf course that plays well to him. We talk about Kyle Peters having the easiest job in golf. Let's keep it easy this week, Corey. Let's hit some fairways, let's hit some greens, and you never know, right? I think he's got major championship game. I think he's got the mindset for major championship golf. Let's have Canada celebrating come Sunday, and let's just transfer that right over into the Maple Leafs picking up a Stanley Cup win for you as well, Corey. Big win tonight. Wow. I'm wearing my jersey. 3-0. We're back 1-1 in the series. This is good. Corey, I know you're out there listening, and he probably watched every minute of tonight's game, and that's gonna propel him right towards a PGA Championship win this week.
Let's hope so. Definitely would be good to see. I mean, with you know, four Canadians in the field, it'd be great to see one of them, if not all of them, to be contending. And the fact that you know, if one of them could win it, and that would be fantastic. And Corey, I think you're right. He's a guy with the style of game that would be very suitable for this. You know, he bombs it a long way, so accurate, and I think that's going to be really, really important during this entire week. And obviously a great caddy on the bag as well. So that would be great.
You ruined my comment. I was going to say, hopefully you can find a great caddy between now and then, but we'll leave it at that. Kyle's one of the best.
Poor Peppers.
All right, folks, that's enough of the PGA Championship, or is it? Might sneak back into the mailbag, which is our next segment. We're going to grab a quick break. It's our final break for this week. We're going to hit the mailbag and then the tip of the week.
All right, welcome back. It's the mailbag, one of your favorite sections of the show and one of ours as well. Got a few great questions here. And you know what? I've got you back here to help answer these. So this is great. A second week in a row and you can help me out on these. All right, first one's first. Why would you consider a utility iron driving iron over a hybrid?
I was a big fan of these for a number of years. Until recently, this is the first year in at least 5 years. I have an actual hybrid in my bag, and it was just, I couldn't find one that launched high enough without going left. And I found the driving iron was just a better club to fit that gap. I find I have two shots with a 3-wood anyway that I can take enough off and play like a kind of a bigger cut with a 3-wood to kind of replace the 5-wood launch. So I kind of like that gap, but this hybrid's been, a good club for me out of the rough. I don't love it off the tee, but if you like to hit a long iron off the tee and things like that, I find it's a little bit better for off the tee. I kind of miss my driving iron, but for me, it was always missing left that I couldn't get out of the bag. So I went with that utility club, and to be honest with you, I kind of missed one. So I might go back at some point, but it really came down just what was best for me. So I think that's where Scott's going to go.
For sure. I think really what it comes down to, if you look at the design for most of the utility irons, driving irons, we're going to see a lot more even in the next little while coming out. But generally, they have a design that provides a lower trajectory than you're going to find in the hybrid. I think what people find sometimes in some of the hybrids, because of the construction with you know, fully hollow body, a little wider, it does launch, but people tend to also see that there's some inconsistencies as far as low in the face, high in the face. They tend to get some hot spots, let's call it, where they get some really low spin effects, high off the face, you know, high spin, lower on the face. So they don't get as much consistency with maybe a hybrid design. So some some people will choose to go to the utility iron, driving iron design because of that. So again, a lot of it really is a personal preference of what you're trying to do with your game and how it fits into your game. But I would say the general thing is that most of the utility irons, driving irons, will generally have a little less offset. CG will be a little bit more forward in the face. So you're also going to see, as a result of it, lower spin, lower launch. And then as a result of it as well, it's a little bit more workable. It doesn't have that CG being as far back, so it's not quite as stable, we'll call it. So if players like to, you know, work the ball one way or the other, they find that might be easier with the utility iron. All right, next one. Who do you think is the most talented PGA Tour player that has yet to break through with a win? So not even a player that hasn't won a major yet, but a player that has not even won yet.
Yeah.
That's a big list.
I had to do a little bit of research here. Oh, it's a huge list. And I'm not going to go back to guys like Jeff Overton.
Or
things like that.
Oh, God,
What was his old slogan? Boom, baby.
I actually saw him conduct a sponsor clinic at Riviera about 5 years ago, where he'd sit in front of a room with a whole bunch of sponsors and kind of kibitz back and forth. And if you wanted to find a picture of a guy who couldn't get out of a room fast enough, it would have been him. He looks so uncomfortable. He got out of there as fast as he possibly could. I don't think any of the sponsors got much out of it. I don't think he wanted to be there. It was just a big obligation. And not the guy that I thought would stick around on tour for sure.
Well, that's fair. For me, I'm going to go give you two names. Abraham Answer for me is number one. This guy, I feel like I have to bring it up. Maybe I'm just flexing. I've been inside the ropes and been paid to be inside the ropes. I would pay $100 to go inside the ropes and watch an hour long short game session by this guy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And easily. And his caddy, I would just pay $100 to be beside Dale.
Dale.
You just hear Dale talk about bacon and smoke 100 cigarettes.
This drink guy's, Coors Light.
Yeah, drink Coors Light. I hope he doesn't drink when he's working. I don't know. Maybe he does. But, you know, he's got all the short game shots in the world. He's a great ball striker. He's not the longest guy. He's very, very tiny, but great guy. And then the other guy I'm going to shout out, and maybe it's people forget about this guy, is Nicholas Kolsarts. This guy was a bomber out there. He played
The muscles from Brussels.
Oh, just a great body head to toe. Was that weird? If it was,
apologize. That was weird. Talk to your wife.
This guy played in two Ryder Cups, I believe. He's 32, 31 now. Oh man, he might be 33 now at this point. Never broke through on the PGA Tour. I believe he does have a couple wins out on the European Tour, which shout out to the PGA Tour in a event which is kind of both. Didn't recognize any wins for people that have won outside of the PGA Tour, which I guess brings into Matthew Fitzpatrick into that list as well. So those are my three guys.
All right. I'm just going to give you one straight away because he's a guy I've actually thought about, and it's somebody we've talked about as well. You know, he was a two-time winner on the McKenzie Tour. He finished second to Max Homa at Quail Hollow in the Wells Fargo Championship. Joel Damon, he's a guy who's been in the mix a fair bit. Great dude. Fun clips this week with him, obviously not so happy.
F you.
Exactly. But this guy is super talented. The more fans get to know him, the more they love him. And obviously he's had a lot of exposure through some different podcasts and some different things that he's come on, different media appearances. But such a great dude and really, really talented. And it would be great to see him win on the PGA Tour, sort of cement his legacy, cement his spot out there, because I'm a little worried. This is a guy who has said before that, you know, if he got a bunch of money in the bank, he might just disappear and not play golf again.
He said this week on last week on No Laying Up, won the lottery, he wouldn't play professional golf.
Yeah. So,
I love that he said that.
Yeah, so I'm just hoping he does get a win and maybe it locks him in. Maybe he doesn't win too much that he disappears, but wins enough to keep him around because I think he's good for the game of golf.
I agree. He's also, if anyone ever asks who's the one guy I mean, obviously Tiger's up there, but I don't even know. Maybe I'd pick Joel over him, but the one guy you wish you could get on here is definitely Joel Damon. I think I just, I haven't ever had the chance to apologize for the four iron fiasco that when I bent his four iron wrong and then had to pretend I was just adjusting it. But we'll get to that one day when we get Joel on this podcast.
Sounds good. All right, we'll get on to the next one here. Someone says, looking to add another 10 yards off the tee, would a new shaft in my driver help that?
I don't know.
I'll tell you what.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I need to, what are your numbers? What's going on?
Need a lot more info than that.
Like, yeah, you know, I told Scott I needed 10 yards off tee. I went and saw him. He's like, we got to do a lot of more work to get 10 yards. We just got to get you away from the golf ball to start. Like, let's start with there. So I have no idea, to be honest with you. Former fitter of the year. I haven't brought that up in like 10 episodes.
You know what? I've answered this one a fair bit. I've talked to a lot of people about this. I think the problem comes, it's the perception that automatically, you know, you change shafts and automatically you're going to jump 10 yards. It's not that easy. It can be that easy.
It can.
If you got lucky, but it's more for a lot of the other reasons of things that are going on. I mean, you could have a very poorly fitted one that doesn't really provide the, you know, a consistent strike point. There'd be a lot of different weights. There's so many different things that can factor in here. But I think what people have to realize is that it's really the fitting process and the knowledge of that fitter to match up the golf club to what you're doing that can make the difference and possibly add you that 10 yards. Don't just take a driver and say, you know what, I'm not happy with this. I need to gain 10 yards. I got to get a new shaft for this. That's not necessarily where you're going to get it from. It could be, but don't automatically think it's the spot where it's going to be gained. I mean, really, in the end, a golf shaft is really an energy delivery device, and it really is going to change what happens is how the club, you know, moves during the swing, and it's going to change how you contact the golf ball. So it's not going to happen automatically, but yes, there is a possibility that it could help you gain some yardage, but not because it's going to be all of a sudden make you faster. It could be a reduction in spin. It could be an increase in launch. There could be a lot of factors in there.
Like, I could get you a shaft, probably, if you're, like, a super high-spin hitter that maybe you're going to get 10 more yards. It might be 40 more yards offline, but it could spin at nothing, and it might get you 10 more yards on the TrackMan or whatever, but it probably isn't the best fit for you.
No, for sure. And it may, as I said to one person, you know, it may be a case of you just hit one shot really, really well. And don't assume that's, you know, going to happen over and over again. If you just go to a fitting and it happens one time, that's not necessarily, you know, something that you can depend on over and over again.
Oh, shout out to the guy, though, in the fittings that, like, snaps hook. There's this legendary guy that used to come into our store all the time. He'd snap hook a 7-iron. It would go, like, 185 total. Right. Oh, I hit 185 yards. And it would be 60 yards offline. But all he cared about, he was hit that distance. 7-iron, 185 yards. So if that's the guy you want to be with your driver, then sure, we can make that happen.
We could go on and on about that one, but we won't. Let's move on here. All right. Someone asked, how many practice holes does a pro player get to play at each site each week? You want to tackle that one or shall I?
Yeah, no, it depends on the week. Right now, these guys can get as much as they want, right? They got Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to get and play practice rounds.
Why do you explain that, why that's the case?
So
most people don't understand, you know, how those days work before the tournament starts.
Yeah, so Monday, Tuesday are normal practice round days. The guys can do whatever they want. They can get up, go to the range, whatever time they want to get there, go out. It's you don't sign up for a practice round. You just kind of walk to the tee and, you know, whoever's there at the time, hey, you want to play together? Sure, let's go play, you know, threesome, whatever. Or maybe you find a guy earlier. But Wednesday is usually the pro-am. But now because there's no pro-ams, you know, guys can go play at any point. Pro-ams are also, not everyone in the field plays pro-ams. And I think people forget that. You know, if you're a recent winner or, you know, one of the regular guys out there, you'll probably play every pro-am. Or if you're Tiger Woods and you're like, I'm never playing a pro-am, I think at 82 wins, I think that's the cutoff point where you never have to play a pro-am again. But generally speaking, in a normal tournament, you just don't get that, right? You have to play pro-ams. And if we're done the Champions Tour, you got to play two of them because that's how they make their money. So generally speaking, nowadays, what I'm hearing is we're hearing a lot of 9, 9, and maybe an additional 9, which is amazing. because practice rounds, oh my god,
they take forever. People don't realize how long they take and how painful they are.
They are
especially as a caddy.
They're so bad. Like, I almost have tears in my eyes thinking about how hot it was in Virginia, and we were out there for 6 hours playing that practice
round. Only six?
Round.
That's a short one.
Yeah, it was, and that's the thing, and that's how they are, right? Is that guy? Because the funny thing is, from tee to green, it's usually fine, and it feels kind of normal, and they usually hit one. They might hit a second shot off the tee, and you write some numbers down in your book, and you move on, but it just, they go on and on. They get to the chip.
Especially around the greens.
Chip and chip and chip and chip and chip and chip.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, so, yeah, but that's basically it. Is it any different on the LPGA? I haven't had the luxury of being out there.
No, not really. And, I think LPGA, the players tend to stay on site a little bit more. On the PGA Tour, you'll see situations where players will go off site to maybe play a different golf course or things like that, just as a, corporate outing or whatever.
LPGA's, I forgot about that too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, LPGA is pretty much the same. You've got the pro-ams going on. Players will get in. It depends when they get in on their travel day. If they get in late Sunday night or if it's Monday itself, maybe they'll just get in nine that day. If they're familiar with the golf course, then they're probably not going to play as much, but generally I think most of the players try to get 18 in if they can, 27 hopefully. Maybe sometimes they'll maybe play the hard nine twice and then maybe walk the other nine and maybe chart out a few things. And again, LPGA is a little bit different than the PGA Tour. PGA Tour tends to have more events with multiple courses, some of their pro-am type events in the desert or Pebble Beach or whatever, and those are really hard with the rookies. And I think we've talked about that a little bit before of Michael Glegic on here talking about having to go in early to some of those events to see the practice rounds. But generally, outside of the pro-am, in most cases 18 to 27 is probably what you're going to see for a lot of the events.
Yeah, a lot of these guys are so busy. I remember, the last time I was out there, we got to wrap it up. I can't do dinner tonight. I got to go to this school and teach them how to putt. Yep. And these are the type of things that they have to volunteer for. And it's part of their contracts on being on the PGA Tour. And I think it's not a big deal, right? If you really think about it, I got to give back to the community. Not a big deal, but it's exhausting. And I don't want to act like I've been out there full time by any stretch of imagination, but 1 week is exhausting. I cannot imagine doing 4 or 5 weeks in a row. Those guys, it sounds crazy, but those guys get tired because it just does not end. And you're in the heat and you're in the rain. If you're not in the heat, it doesn't stop.
No, and I can remember a practice round on the LPGA Tour one time where there was about two or three weather delays. So in the end, the round probably took close to 10 hours to get done. So if you think about that, a player being out there for that long, what it takes, getting the stuff done afterwards, as you said, having to take care of corporate stuff. There's, other family obligations, people after tickets, things they're doing for promos for the tour, meeting the media, having discussions with the media. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that has to take place there. So that means they're not necessarily out there trying to play, 27 holes a day. They're trying to save their energy for the tournament.
They're not all Sungjae Im.
No, it's exactly it. All right, last question here. For years, the PGA Championship was decided at match play. Should it go back to that to distinguish itself?
I'd love it. I would love it if they went back to that. Let's get something different. What's wrong with that? Let's make it match play. Why not? I think it'd be cool. I'm all for it, 100%.
I think, the PGA Championship has definitely struggled to have an identity over the years.
Agree.
And I think as a result of that, I don't think it's a bad idea at all. I know we have the, WGC match play and we have a couple of, events that way. But I think people really see and understand the excitement of match play now. They appreciate it. They see the Ryder mm-hmm. Cup. They see the President's Cup. They see the Solheim Cup. And they see, what those matches are all about. And think about that. If you had to play that, not for a WGC title, which, granted, it's lots of cash and it's important and prestige, but to win a major championship, that would definitely put another layer on this cake as far as being, super important. So I wouldn't mind seeing that at all.
I also think it separates all four to be different and very different from another. Like the Open, we know what we're getting. We're getting a links golf course, a links golfer, you know, usually he's going to win. Outside of when Phil won out of nowhere,
crazy weather.
Like crazy weather, rain. Like the person that's able to battle and keep their mind in it's going to end up winning. You look at the U.S. Open, it's the opposite. They're, you know, we're talking about plus one winning that tournaments, you know, long, rough, tough. Again, we talk about the Masters, the same every single year, the prestige behind it. You can overwhelm people. The golf course, if you actually look at it, really isn't too difficult. You need to putt really well. Let's throw in match play where it's like the thinker. You got to think one person out there and you just got to beat that person. You don't get it at that stage. I would be all for it. Do I think it will ever happen? At least in my... Maybe in my lifetime, this sounds bad. Not in Fluff's lifetime. Not Scott's Fluff's lifetime. It might not happen.
Bite me.
but I'm all for it. I would love it if I was commissioner of the PGA. Would I do that? Absolutely. I would switch that over. Why not?
Yeah, here's the thing. I mean, you know, they talk about the field being one of the strongest fields in golf. So the common, you know, discussion over the years is that, you know, they couldn't go to match play because if they're playing match play, you might end up with not your best players in the final match.
But wouldn't it be cool if Bob Barker, the PGA professional at Hilton Head, is playing Rory McIlroy in the quarterfinals?
100%.
Who cares if Rory wins that? Like, I think that's so cool.
Yeah, I think for that reason alone. So at some point, I think they'll have to give it some thought. They've got some great venues coming up. They're booked into for a long, long time ahead. But, you know, I would say maybe they'll get nostalgic at some point and give it some consideration. This year, being the first major of the year, it gets a little bit of a bump up. Mm-hmm. But in most years, it doesn't. So if you're going to stand out, you definitely have to be different. So I'd love to see it go back to match play.
I agree. Well, that's it for the mailbag, Scott. As per usual, everyone send in your questions every week. Scott opens the mailbag, and we appreciate them. They're one of our favorite segments of the week. But also, I think one of the favorite segments for everyone is everyone wants to get better. You can, you know, each day, just get a little bit better. And if you listen to this podcast each day, you will get better by listening to the tip of the week. So let's hear it, Scott. What's our tip of the week? Because I need a big tip. This is the last week before we go on the Flagstick Open. We had a lesson last week.
Yeah.
I don't think either one of us walked out of the lesson really that happy, but we were moving in the right direction. Yeah. Found something today. I think we're moving in the direction we want to. Just trying to find that driver. I'm trying to get over
getting ready for your left-handed game, are you?
No. Trying to get ready for the Flagstick Open, which is next week, which maybe we'll throw some odds on the chances of me winning the C or B flight. We're kind of hovering in between. Will I play the tips? Will I play the forward tees? Stay tuned till next week. But before we get to next week, we need to hit the tip of the week. Scott McLeod, PGA professional, what do you got?
All right. So this week, I want to talk a little bit about how the trail leg moves in the golf swing. It's really important for people to have really good footwork in their golf swings. And one thing that I see a lot of people do is as they make their downswing, I see their trail leg. So if you're a right-handed golfer, your right leg, I see that right foot kind of just go forward, which usually indicates that your hips are just going to go forward in your downswing. They're not really rotating and turning. And we really want your lower body to be turning. So what I like people to do is to think about the right foot, their trail leg, if you're right foot, if you're a right-handed golfer, basically banking a little bit. So you're basically going on the inside edge of your foot a little bit rather than out onto your toe. And basically it's leaning towards your, if you're a right-handed golfer, your left side. And a neat way to kind of work on that a little bit is you can actually tee up a golf ball right inside your heel, believe it or not. And as you go to make a downswing, you can have your trail leg heel go towards the target and bump that ball off the tee as opposed to it just going straight forward. And it helps your pelvis turn properly, helps you from moving the club way far outside in and gets you on a little bit better path as well. So we've had a lot of success with that. It's a small movement. It's a small indicator of what's happening with a lot of other things in your golf swing. But look at your trail leg, your right foot if you're right-handed golfer, left foot if you're left-handed golfer, and make sure that in your downswing, it is banking a little and going towards your other foot, not out and forward more than anything.
And you see that a lot with, you know, older people playing golf too, the flexibility, they almost forget about the rotation and everything. And, you know, if you're somebody that's a little bit older, you're finally, you're a little less flexible, you're feeling less flexible. It seems like a good drill. I know my dad would probably really benefit from this drill to actually start rotating more versus sliding.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of lateral movement that takes place, but this sort of takes that into account. So we have that little bit of a bump a little bit towards the target. Then we begin to have our rotation and our turn. So having that banking, that foot really indicates what's happening. So just have a look at that if you're you know, playing around with some downswings, and you'd be surprised how much that can enhance your game.
I love it, Scott. Well, that's it for this week, PGA Championship week. We wrapped up the WGC. We wrapped up Jim Furyk. LPGA is back. The Korn Ferry Tour. Taylor Pendrith. You know, I lost his name there because he just comes in second all the time. So he's 169th in the world. Guy hasn't even played on the PGA Tour. Like, it's insane. But we're PGA Championship week. By the time we get back next week, Scott, Brooks could be a three-peat winner.
Could
or Tiger. Tiger could win Major 16. 83 wins. Ricky could win. Finau could win. Corey Connors could win. All could happen. The Leafs could be out of the playoffs, and this podcast could be really depressing. I might have one-word answers all week, and you could be asking the questions. Or they could be on to the quarterfinals. This is where we're at. But at this point, Scott, the beers are empty. There's no more golf to talk about. Why don't we just let them play, and we'll come back next week and chat it out. Thank you for the tip of the week. I know there's a bunch of people out there working on that, working on the rotation. And 1 week away, 1 week away from the Flagstaff Open. Scott, real quick, do you think I'm ready?
I think you're ready. I mean, you know the rules of golf now, so we're not going to see you teeing it up in the drop area. You just got to be patient, and you could win your category. And I'll tell you what, maybe next week we'll have an announcement about maybe a special prizing that we're going to have for the tournament as well. As we mentioned before, we have some great sponsors in TaylorMade and Adidas Golf, and there's kind of some cool stuff that we've got going as far as our swag, but the winner of the tournament could be in line for something really, really special. So we can talk about that next week.
And that big special thing is an interview with me. On the 18th hole on Sunday. That's what everyone's here for. Well, you got to listen next week to find out what people are playing for at the Flagstaff Open. Hopefully we'll be chatting some PGA Championship next week, amongst many other things. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will be back with you next week, and we will chat with you then. Like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.